Well, there are two matters that they cannot handle. I'll finish with one of them. There are two things that they just don't know. They have no explanation for. One is Dr. Smartheim's golden fountain pen, which wrote down a lot of things he didn't intend to say, and finally had to destroy it. And the other is another mystery worthy of mention concerns an unusual clock, which was once the proud possession of a theatrical agent. Here, thanks to our friendly anonymous source on the committee, we have an exact transcript of the statement made by this individual under oath to the Quirk Commission. That statement, slightly edited to facilitate reading, is as follows. May it please you, honorable ladies and gentlemen of the commission, I'm only a poor and humble agent, a servant for the many talented men and women in the worlds of entertainment, showbiz, and the seven lively arts. I know that there are those people who speak of us badly, speak of us as agents as a group, putting the knock upon us as greedy and lazy parasites who do nothing and collect 10% and sometimes more of the so-called artists' hard-earned cash. They call us gangsters, hustlers, confidence men, and worthless clods. But they do not know you know what from Shinola. Artists are very temperamental and ungrateful and frequently lacking in any talent whatsoever. They also tend to lack humility, these egotistical, arrogant, so-called artists. Without agents, they would be nothing. They would be bums in the park, that's what they'd be, or filling up the jails, the booby hatches, and the morgues. Not only do we agents do them great service by arranging for them to have an opportunity to practice their so-called arts at the public's expense, but also, if I may say so in all modesty, we are patriots who save our country much trouble. We keep these lazy, no-account rascals and rogues off the streets in the welfare rolls, where they most likely belong, but where they would surely bankrupt government at state, local, and federal levels. It has been argued by some of my colleagues in the agent vocation that by all logic and right, we, the agents, deserve 10% of the gross national product for our good works. Be that as it may, I do not think it is fair that we should be subject to the constant harassment and surveillance of the moronic minions of the Internal Revenue Service, who do not understand the complex nature of our business, and who are only living and waxing fat off of our excessive taxes anyway. Agents, all except for IRS agents, are useful and valuable citizens of this great land. It has always seemed practically ironic to me, if you'll pardon the expression, that agents, who are, after all, simple and honest businessmen and capitalistic to the core, should be held up for public ridicule while any deadbeat who can play a piano or paint a picture or swallow a sword should receive applause and accolades, cash and kudos from one and all. After every performance, after every exhibition or show, these so-called artists should modestly retire to the rotten woodwork from whence they came and let the agent step forward and take the bow. But, honorable sirs and ladies, let us leave philosophy to the professionals and get to the business at hand. I know your time is valuable, and so is mine. Time is valuable to everyone, except those so-called artists who lounge and slouch about, loafing and inviting their souls. As a poet himself, a publicly confessed bum, urged everyone to do. It's true that at one time I handled a worthless human being who was billed as Proteus Prince of Impersonators. That was good. To the best of my recollection, he also called himself Jacob Quirk. But this may have been pure coincidence. For in the showbiz, there be few, if any, if the truth be known, that give their right name. Here let me just ad lib and say right out, and without shame, that my name is not Irving Schmertz. I would rather not reveal my legal name, if you don't mind, and I won't ask you yours, which looks to me, honorables, like a kind of Mexican standoff, if not a fair deal. Suffice it to say that when I prepared myself for the vocation of agents, I noticed that all successful agents at that time were named Irving or variations thereof, such as Irvin, Irwin, Irwin, etc. Schmertz was suggested to me by my first secretary, who noted that it sounded good and original and seemed to fit. And that's good enough to me, gentlemen. Sometimes a thing just feels right, and you cannot explain why, but you do it. And that is because showbiz is a mystical thing. Anyhow, I handled this individual who called himself Jake, and what was he? He was a punk kid who could make faces, that's all. I made a star out of him, I put his name in lights and all that, but he was strictly a nothing from beginning to end. And I do not for one minute believe all this, well, blank, about turning himself into other people and all that. That sounds like some kind of a second-rate drunken press agent. And Jake was too stupid and conceited to ever think of the idea. Nevertheless, before he lost his mind and his humility, I handled him very well, right up there in the big time. And we got along all right, except for arguments about money. He never could understand all the expenses and overhead it cost to take a talentless nobody and turn him into a star and keep him there. It did no good to show him facts and figures. He'd go over them with a fine-tooth comb and yell and scream about everything, even minor mistakes in addition and subtraction. He was a reckless spender, too, and among other deviant and antisocial things, he wore wide neckties long before they were correct again. To understand this, ladies and gentlemen, you've got to understand that I'm sort of a demon about time. Time is as precious as blood and energy in my business. Time is almost as important as money. With clients coming and going all the time and phones ringing constantly, I live by a tight schedule and I have to watch the clock, which is how I became a kind of a clock buff. Started collecting the things and stashing them all over the office in prominent places. Not only for my own purposes, but also that no matter where a client turned, he would see a clock working, ticking off my valuable time. I collected some pretty fine clocks of all kinds, if I do say so myself, and I kept them all synchronized and in perfect working order. Naturally, when the hour struck, it was noisy, as you can imagine, in my office. It was damn near deafening with all those chimes, bells, clonks, and booms. But I had my earplugs ready, which muted the noise and also cut off the sound of my clients' voices and usually scared the stuffing out of them. For, as the hour approached, I was wont to distract them from observing the clocks by various words and gestures, and I only slipped the earplugs in at the last possible second. Mostly they were taken by surprise and scared witless, affording me an opportunity for a good hearty laugh at least once every hour. A man without a sense of humor is only half civilized, I've always said. Well, to make a long story short, ladies and gentlemen, one day I received a package in the mail. Since it was ticking, since I have known many disgruntled and degenerate clients in my time, and even a few jealous competitors, since I have two ex-wives who were so crushed at my walking out on them that they have been half crazy ever since, not to mention some secretaries and other young ladies who, as a result of the most casual and informal encounters, seem to feel that they have some sort of claim against me. For all the above reasons, I instantly called the bomb disposal squad. However, it was not a bomb. It was a beautiful and highly original clock. Judging by its works, I would say early 19th century, but then I'm not a real expert. It was a big, heavy clock with a finely made case and a gold dome on top. It had four different kinds of chimes, all swell sounding, and on the hour, two figures came out. One, a black knight with a curved sword, and the other, a white knight with a red cross on his armor and a big spiked mace. The black knight would swing the sword and miss, and then Whitey would cloud his skull with the mace, tolling the hour resoundingly. I thought it was a gas, and so did most of my other clients, except, of course, the black ones, who are very sensitive these days. With the clock came a card, and I have it here, which said, "To Irving the Great, from a client who will never forget you." I was deeply moved by those sentiments, ladies and gentlemen. 9 times out of 10, they leave, shaking their fists, talking loud and rude, and you never hear from them again. Here at last, I thought, was one who's cooled off enough to understand. I was touched, deeply moved, and sincerely grateful. One day, when the clock was about to strike noon, and I was just getting ready to cut out for a meaningful luncheon with a prominent producer, the big black knight swung that curved razor and cut off the Red Cross knight's head before he could swing a blow with the mace. I could hardly believe my eyes, or my ears either. Even though I had my earplugs firmly seated, I swear to you I heard that knight holler, "Black power, you mother blanker," 12 times. Then he gave me the finger and vanished into the clock forever. Candidly, I felt terrible. It almost ruined lunch for me. But that was only the beginning. In the first place, after that, all kinds of figures came out instead of the knights, usually in pairs and up to no good whatsoever. The things they would say and do, I shudder to repeat. Shudder to think of, let alone to repeat to you. I guess the most costly occasion was when I was about to get this high-priced leading lady from the movies to dump her old agent and sign on the dotted line with me. Well, I carefully arranged it so she would miss the hour. To make double sure, I let the evil clock run down and didn't even wind it. A lot of good that did. Just when she picked up my pen to sign the contract, the damn thing started booming and chiming like crazy. We both looked up, naturally, just in time to see two nude figures come trotting out on the platform. One was a dead ringer for the leading lady in question. And the other, I'm sorry to report to you, was a pretty fair representation of yours truly in a state of nature and, shall we say, somewhat aroused. I was shocked to see what happened. When it was all over, she was furious. She poured a bottle of ink over my head, wadded up the contract, stuffed it in my open mouth, for I was protesting my innocence vehemently, and she left my office vowing never to darken my door again. And unfortunately, for once in her worthless life, that lady has kept her word. That was typical. Even the finest clockmakers in the city couldn't locate the trouble. In fact, they couldn't find out there was any trouble. Every time a clock expert came around, the damn clock behaved perfectly, trying to make me look like a fool. That was not the worst part. That evil clock corrupted every other clock and watch I owned. None of them would keep the correct time or even the same time. I got to where I couldn't tell night from day anymore. And lots of them, without warning or rhyme or reason, began to sound off with, "Cuckoo, cuckoo, Irving is cuckoo." Not only on the hour, but any time they felt like it. Well, honorable sirs and ma'ams, enough is enough. Even the patience and goodwill of an agent is not inexhaustible. Therefore, one day I borrowed a fireman's axe, and I chopped that clock into little bitty pieces. I put the pieces in a sack, and I drove out to a remote place in Central Park. I burned the clock and the works to ashes, and then I urinated upon the ashes of it. Which is how and why I had that unfortunate misunderstanding with the police, who happened along just about that time, and lacking the necessary background information, jumped to a lot of erroneous conclusions. But I bear them no grudge, and I don't bear that ungrateful ex-client who called himself Jacob Quirk any grudge either. If there is such a person, and he's out there somewhere today, I say unto him, "Jake, I'm willing to let bygones be bygones. I'm willing to call it even Steven. It was a good trick, Jake. I'll give you full credit for that. But please, Jake, please, I will be profoundly grateful to you if you will be so kind as to pick on somebody else for a while and leave me alone. Thank you very much for your attention, ladies and gentlemen. I'll give you the same anytime. Drop in my office and see if I don't. My door is always open." Thank you very much.